Before the break, we were talking about doing business. Front offices in Major League Baseball doing businesses, specifically Cubs and White Sox. And one of the Twitter polls that you put up today, Brian, was all about Shohei Ohtani. New ownership, maybe they're going to trade him. Who would be the likely suitor if there was one here in Chicago, Cubs or Sox? After talking to Jesse about the Sox, the way they do business, and the guardrails that he had mentioned,
and no
there's just no way. There's just no way.
No, it's a moot point at this point. It's like, take the Sox out of that poll. Unless there's an epiphany, and in the offseason, like, hey, here's a once-in-a-generation talent, and by the way, we've underachieved for way too long.
We have to change the way we do business.
Right. Yeah. You know, in the business world, if a company is just kind of going along and making some money, making decent, you know, return for their stockholders, but not great, and say the market's going, not lately, up, you know, on an average of 8, 12, 13%, and this company X is making, you know, 5%, they return to their investors or stockholders. Well, you have activist investors, like a big hedge fund or something, come in and buy, you know, billions of dollars worth of stock. And now, either if they're not the majority owner, they own enough of it, like 35%, that
they demand. They push the issue.
They want seats on the board. They want change, right?
Right.
They're going to make noise. And the old guard doesn't like activist investors. They don't want people coming in and saying,
telling them what to do.
Right. And wake up, and this isn't good enough. And you're not losing money, but you're certainly not making even the average return. So, you know, it's time to get new blood in here.
Mm-hmm.
With baseball ownership and the way the White Sox are structured, certainly, again, Jerry's not the majority owner, not by a long shot. Let's say he owns 20%. I've seen 19% back in the day when I was covering them. He went from like 8% to 13-14%, but that's been a couple of decades. So he's been buying up minority shares. But, you know, there's 80% of the team that's owned by other people.
Right.
And there's no activist investors there, right? They all in Jerry we trust. And why wouldn't you? They bought the team for $19 million back in 1981 or whatever it was. And that team... Forbes came out with their NFL list this week. We'll get to that. But the MLB list came out in March.
Mm-hmm.
And on average, Forbes, take it for what it's worth, said on average, teams in MLB increased in value, the organization value, by 9% on average. Only two teams didn't make money last year. Baltimore lost money, and the Marlins were basically...
Baltimore's making it back this year.
Right. I mean, they didn't appreciate in value. How I should say. Baltimore's franchise, you know, unless they build another Camden Yards, they're not getting a spike. But so only two teams out of 30 didn't appreciate in value, which says something about Major League Baseball. It's not the NFL by any stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But the average value of a baseball franchise, according to Forbes, this year in March when they came out, was $2.07 billion. I mean, even the dregs of MLB, on average, were worth $2 billion. The White Sox showed up as 15th, squarely in the middle of that list. They appreciated in value 4% last year, not the 9% on average, only 4%. The Forbes valued them in March at $1.76 billion, well under the average of $2.07 billion on average, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they actually, according to Forbes, had an operating loss of $10 million last year. Now, the Cubs, conversely, they don't have to have Elvis Knight to get 30,000. They just open the gates and they show up like we've seen this year, right?
Yep.
Even with a glorified minor league roster, but they're playing better and exciting and beautiful days and cold beer and whatever gets 30,000 on average, even when you stink, for the most part. The Cubs are what, fourth or fifth in Major League Baseball in franchise value. They are fourth at $3.8 billion. Which makes that $850-900 million investment for the Ricks family pretty good at this point. They went up 13% last year. A lot of numbers here.
Wow.
They made $68 million last year. They didn't lose money because they don't, because people show up. So I'm talking to this guy who has some insight on how the ownership of the Sox works, with Jerry being the chairman, but only owning, say, 20% of the team. And I said, okay, all of a sudden they get 33,000, but you know, they're in the 20s, mid-20s most of the time. Not, they don't have the flock, people flocking and making vacation plans to come to the North Side like the Cubs do. I said, if you're an investor and you own, you know, however much you own of the White Sox, don't you want to see 40,000, closer to 40,000 than 25,000? Doesn't it bother you that your franchise is less than the average value of a franchise in Major League Baseball? You're under $2 billion when other teams who are, you know, in much smaller markets, the Atlanta Braves and St. Louis, the teams Jesse's going to see tomorrow night, they're well above average in much smaller markets. And he explained it to me. He said, no, you're looking at it the wrong way. And look, the White Sox don't own the rate, right? That the state owns that.
Right.
And in my world, they have a sweetheart deal, lease deal, which they've had for a long time.
They're other renters.
They're renters, and the deal does subsidize tickets. If they don't sell 1.5 million tickets, the state picks up, I don't know what the number is, but you know, your tax dollars buy Sox tickets. But he said, you're looking at it the wrong way. Anyone who's invested in the White Sox, their payday, they don't go year to year and think, okay, we need to sell more wonderful Polish sausages and you know, have, you know, the food's terrific. He said they will make their money when the team is sold. Okay? So
it's a bank account.
He said it's like a long-term bond.
Right.
Right? Now, we know Jerry's getting up there in age, and you know, I don't know if he's going to want to run this thing until he draws his last breath. I mean, he's got hopefully many more years to do that.
He's in his
80s.
Okay.
But so that's one. And so the Nationals are on sale or for sale. The rumors this week, reports are that Anaheim's next in line. I don't know what Jerry's intent is, but these Sox investors are going to get their money when that team is sold.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they don't. It's probably part of the reason their value is depressed is because they don't own their own building. And, you know, that's part of the deal, right? I mean, there's rumors that Stan Kroenke, who owns Los Angeles Rams, you know, the Walmart money, that he might buy the Anaheim Angels. You know, he'll keep buying up everything in California.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I don't know what the value of the White Sox would actually be if they were put up for sale. You know, it's here's your Forbes valuation. But in a major market, if you wanted to change the way you operate it, if you wanted to come in and be that activist investor, but now it's your investment and you wanted to, you know, play big boy baseball and give out $100 million contracts and give opt-outs to superstars, that value might shoot up $1 billion right away.
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
And so my point is, and long-winded that is, there's no, even at the ownership level, there doesn't seem to be a sense of urgency when you look around and say we average 25,000 people or whatever the average is.
And you know what, Brian, you bring up a great point, because here, on the surface, we're fans. We want to see winning baseball. We want to see all the things that any fan wants to see, right?
Right.
But behind the scenes, when we break it down, you see it's a business. It's
yep.
about making money. It's about hitting financial expectations. It's about all of these things that really have nothing to do directly with winning.
And look,
and that's the disappointment that we have as fans for either side of town.
And if you were on the ground floor buying the White Sox with Jerry and Eddie Einhorn back in the day when they first bought it at $19 million, and even at $1.7 billion, the Forbes valuation this year, I can't do the math on that. What the hell of a return that is,
that's
right?
That's insane.
It's insane. And so
40-year return, that is absolutely insane.
Absolutely insane. And that, I mean, that's a hell of a long-term bond. If
yep.
you go, you know, say they sell within 5 years, just pick a number, right? And it does sell for north of $2 billion at that point. I mean, and you own 2%, 3%, whatever it is. I mean, that's generational wealth.
Right. And for all of those board members and owners, the idea is that they personally win and their bank accounts win, yet
right.
we don't see a winner on the field.
Right.
So
and that's
it's
why
the
Jerry
business of
trust.
It.
Yeah.
Right. It's the business of it that doesn't necessarily translate to winning on the field. And that will always be the disconnect between
yeah.
ownership of professional teams and fans that just want to see their favorite team win. And that's how you show Yeah, again, we go back to that, and we've got to hit break here. We're running late, but that's how you show your appreciation or your disapproval, by not spending money. And, I mean, we've done that on the South Side, right? And that's why they're not worth as much as what they are on the North Side.
Everyone's not Jerry Jones, right? He loves to be on the sideline. I mean, he gives more post-game press conferences than any, no GM, or sometimes he's the first guy before the coach talks. I mean, that he is so tight. And look, you know, how big is that palace he built himself down in Dallas-Fort Worth, right?
Right.
But he wants to win. But by the way, I think his franchise is worth $6 billion.
See, that's the thing. That's the thing. The mindset has to change. We've got to hit break here. But the mindset, before we hit break, the mindset has to change in that you can spend more money and actually make more money back. You could be active in investing in your team and actually build the value than sitting back and just waiting to sell the team. Because in the meantime, that's not goodwill for your fan base. And being fans, absolutely, we want goodwill with the fan base. 312-332-3776. Here till 11, where Peggy and Dion pick up the effort here on ESPN 1000. We've got to talk Bears. We're all over the place, but we will talk Bears before we get out of here on ESPN 1000. We'll be right back. Bears and Browns tonight, preseason game number 3. It was a busy week for the Bears. Some people coming out saying the Bears aren't going to do very well. And then Eddie Jackson, Brian Hanley, I thought I saw on Twitter, said, hey, we're going to surprise some people. So what's it going to be?
He would be on the top of the list of people who need to surprise.
I totally agreed.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just really interesting. It's really, really going to be bad, or it's not going to be that bad. And then I'm seeing other articles saying the media is making too much of this, that it's not going to be as bad as people say. However, former OC Mike Martz had something to say.
You know, Fields is a guy that is not he makes a lot of mistakes, not particularly accurate at times. He's not a quick read and react guy, and he's on a horrendous team. Talent-wise. I don't know if I've seen an offense that bad in talent since the 0-16 Detroit Lions. You know, they just don't have anybody there. I think if you put Rodgers down there, Rodgers would be last in this list too. You know, so, man, I tell you, it's a bad football team, you know, the Bears right now. So,
wow, that was shocking to hear. But how much does Mike Martz really know currently? I mean, he sees what everybody else sees. But can Justin Fields rise to the occasion? Can he overcome the obstacles? You know, Mike Martz isn't wrong. He went on to say, that wasn't in that audio, that, you know, he needs a real good team to play for a couple of years to learn how to be a quarterback. I don't disagree with that. But have every successful quarterback had great teams? Or have they been able to, as young players, get past some obstacles, work around them, adapt, and that's how they became who they are?
So Mike Martz's comments come a week after Dan Orlovsky basically said they have the worst offensive line and worst receiving group in the NFL, right? So now we're starting to get some momentum. I mean, we know they're not good.
Right, but 0-16, the worst ever since
2008. I mean, what? Since the Lions. What? I mean, that worst offensive talent. Again, they're down to, I think a caller said last week, they were down to five and a half wins, losses over under in Vegas when they started at 6.5. So they're trending the wrong way. This team doesn't go winless. And his point is that the offense could be the worst in all of the National Football League. That takes in a lot of, you know, territory. I'm saluting Matt Eberflus for playing his starters up to a full half tonight, you know, in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. You know, usually, no matter what your prospects for the season are, coaches keep anyone worth of any value or any talent on the sidelines because they don't want to get them hurt before the regular season, right? In the last preseason game, you're going to see everyone out there for at least a half. And I get part of that's the quirk of the preseason schedule where you had the quick turnaround from the Kansas City game to Seattle on a Thursday night. And now you've had an extended time till you play again and wrap it up. But You need to play these guys. You need to see what you have in Justin Fields. We talked about last week, Mark. You can't just say you can't evaluate Justin Fields this year because there's crap around him. I mean, that's not good enough.
No, that certainly is not going to work.
You're going to have to, you know, Eberflus, Luke Getsy, Ryan Poles, the entire staff, the front office, they're all going to have their eyes on evaluating the quarterback to see if he's got any of the earmarks or a lot of the earmarks of a franchise quarterback because they didn't draft him. I'm not saying that this is a one-and-done year and they'll come to some conclusion, grand conclusion at the end of the season. That's not going to happen. But they're not just going to throw their hands up and say, oh, Mike Martz said we're terrible, and and Dan Orlovsky said that we got the worst.
Yeah, basically people are saying that this team is going to ruin the potential of Justin Fields.
Right, and you know, I get it. They're not going to lift him up. The offensive line isn't going to surprise everyone and become this, you know, the talk of the league midway through the season. And the wide receiver group is a bunch of, you know, guys on second or third chances and guys who've just been drafted. And, you know, I get it. I mean, there's no Davante Adams there. But
there is a way for him to develop. And again, we're discounting the possibility that he learns and he really adjusts to these challenges, his individual challenges, which people have mentioned, and the team challenges. And he actually does something far and beyond what a Mike Martz or Orlovsky or even Justin Palmer jumped in on this, too.
Yeah.
This week, a former Bears quarterback that I barely remember. So I guess everybody's
been
an expert.
About 40 of them. So don't,
you're right. Everybody's
don't feel
an
bad
expert
about
now.
It. Yeah, right. I mean, Mike Martz, I know he's trying to make a point, but I'll take that bet that Aaron Rodgers was down here behind this line. He'd elevate the group no matter, right? They wouldn't have the worst receiving core, the worst offensive line if Aaron Rodgers was calling the plays behind it under center. So. I disagree with Mike Martz on that one.
Yeah, we've got Bear Fan Bob always likes to jump in here on ESPN 1000. Hey, Bear Fan Bob, talking Bears, perfect guy to call in.
Good morning. Yeah, I just caught you just right here. So, as I said before, and I'm going to say this again, and I think Coach Eberflus has done a really good job about this. Me hanging around all of my football buddies, there's no I in team. I think Coach Eberflus has gotten rid of a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have an actual team going out there, not a bunch of frickin' celebrities or, stars, yada, yada, yada. We all know what that is. Just people who want to play football. This is going to go pretty far. Do I think they're going to win a lot of games? Gee, I don't know, but I know they're going to be competitive and be in it in every game.
So you disagree with Martz? You disagree with Martz?
Well, I understand Mike Martz is a mad scientist, and I understand Mike Martz won a Super Bowl ring, 15 years ago? But that was 15 years ago, not today.
Mm-hmm.
And last time I checked, he hasn't coached a team in a very long time. You know, we'll give him his cred for what he's done, but that's not today. You know, and he's not in that locker room today.
All right, so it's irrelevant, mostly.
Exactly right. I think he's probably talking to make himself some money and get back in the media or doing something like that. Just a guess, but that's
it's a solid
me.
Tactic.
Yeah, and it usually works most of the time. But, you know, guys like me don't buy it. I think what I'd like to see tonight is, you know, most of the offensive line playing probably the whole game instead of half the game. I'd like to see a David Montgomery sighting for a change. I haven't seen him at all in preseason. You know, and get some more cohesiveness with this team so that way, you know, we can see it come together. And I think, like I said, it's going to be better. And I might, you guys are on tomorrow, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I might even call in. I'll be fishing tomorrow. It'd be fun.
All right, good. What will you be fishing for? Whatever bites?
Actually, perch. We got 21 perch out of the lake the other day.
Mm. Wow, those are
tasty.
Good eating. Yeah.
Fry
those
things up.
They're tasty and delicious. Make no mistake about it.
How do you prepare the perch, Bob?
I have an old recipe that I got from my grandparents down in Georgia. And I don't know, I'll give it to you if you want.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, you take eggs and you whip them. Mm-hmm. The trick is you put some vanilla in the eggs.
Okay.
Then you take the fish after it's been filleted and you soak it in there a little bit. You know, a few minutes, you know, just to get some of the egg on there.
Mm-hmm.
Then you take, breadcrumbs and flour and you mix it. And then you take the fish. And then you pat it in the breadcrumbs and flour. Then you fry them in butter. Ooh. It's almost like eating sweet crepes. Tasty and delicious and very unnutritious.
Yeah, but that's okay. Gotta love it. That's okay.
Yeah, because you got that little French toast thing going because you have right. the vanilla in the eggs.
Oh, no.
That is
crepes.
French.
Crepes. Oh. They're wonderful. And you might try that with bluegills, too. Works every time.
All right. Thank you, Bob. We appreciate it. We'll hear from you tomorrow.
Guys, Mike, talk at you tomorrow. Have a good
Thanks,
day.
Bob. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
You too.
You know what, Bob, you know, he's not flustered by Martz. Irrelevant, I think he said that comment was.
Jordan Palmer.
Yeah, I mean, come on, it's like Jordan Palmer. You know, okay, how relevant is that? Everybody wants to chime in. Everybody wants to, you know, have themselves be heard. You had Orlovsky, a bigger voice, obviously, now, and Lewis Riddick. But we'll see what happens. Look forward to seeing them play the Browns tonight. Again, it's preseason, and having the O-line play more than they have, I think that's important. I think Eberflus is on to something, because the idea of getting the team ready means you have to actually get them some game time, even though it's preseason.
Are you buying that Tevin Jenkins is really legitimately playing for a starting right guard position, or do you think this is trying to just showcase and get whatever you can get for him?
It's a little bit of both. Look, if they're showcasing them, but he really, really shows
delivers.
Up,
yeah.
Then all of a sudden it's like, well, what are we doing here? We can actually use him. So I think it's a little bit of both.
Here's hoping, right?
Yeah. 312-332-3776. If you want to jump on, we're here till 11. Peggy and Dion, follow us here on ESPN 1000. Jump in. We want to talk to you about baseball. Frustrations on the south side, promise on the north side. What are the Bears going to look like tonight, and what is their hope? Are you buying what Mike Martz is saying? 312-332-3776. Back after this.
In the air, right field, Hatton unloads. That one back and gone. A two-run homer for Ian Happ. First hit of the night for the Cubs, and it gives them the lead. To lead off the 10th, and it is 4-2.
Well, how about that? What a night for Ian Happ. My goodness. That is just the second home run that Williams has allowed this year in 47 innings of work.
All right, Brian Henley, if Ian Happ was on the south side, maybe one of the first things he would hear from Coach Medicino be like, I don't want to see home runs. Don't worry about the home runs. Hit 300. Then we'll talk.
I call it.
And then when you don't hit 300, there's no talk about hitting a home run.
Yeah, help. No, he, you know, whatever you think, he could have helped this White Sox team. And he's still doing pretty well for the Cubs.
Yes, he could have. And we'll never know why. It seemed a little obvious. You were the first one to bring it up that I heard. Maybe somebody else did, but I mean, made a lot of sense.
He's got power from both sides. His defense is appreciably better. He might still lead in outfield putouts. I mean, that's how good he is. He's been, and how much he's changed.
Well, I can only assume the price tag was too high for Han.
What's too? Well, I mean, are you trying to win something or not? What's too high? I mean, if you're not going to get Juan Soto, Rick, I mean, could you Rick Han?
No,
can you
could
go
they
ahead
have
and
wanted
get
Aloy?
I mean they don't want no. But I'm just saying whatever. I can't believe, I mean, apparently since he was a move, the Cubs were asking a lot. But the team that was obvious to me, because we're watching him all the time, is the White Sox needed a guy just like him, right? If you're not going to go top shelf, shopping in the Ian Happ aisle is not a bad idea in my world. But did you see the schedule came out for next year in Major League Baseball?
It is driving me nuts that they're making such a big deal out of next year's schedule while we're watching these bad White Sox. On NBC Sports Chicago.
It's probably
That's
not a
just
good
me
thing.
Personally.
It's probably not a good thing. You're not going to play as many division games as you.
You know, I'm still trying to figure out if I like that or not. I like the idea that we're going to play everybody, but then again, you know, some of the games are not going to be as meaningful. I don't know.
So you're going to play everybody at some point, either home or away, right? I mean, that's the biggest change. It's everyone gets a chance to see Shohei, whether the Cubs go to Anaheim or the Sox go to Anaheim or they come here. if I was going out to Wrigley next year, and that's to be determined because I'm not going this year, I'm on a little boycott that no one pays attention to. The Cubs getting the Rangers, the Mariners, okay, whatever, that's, you know, better. The Rays, fine. I mean, the Orioles, Cleveland, the Red Sox, and Royals, that doesn't, I mean, going out to Oakland doesn't really excite me.
Right. Hey, playing the Orioles, I like watching the Orioles play.
Right, but I can watch them when they play the White Sox.
That's true.
I mean, the Yankees, the Cubs going to Yankee Stadium, these Cubs, whatever that looks like, unless they're going to really shake things up in the offseason and, you know, make a big splash.
Well, I think we could agree that this is built, this concept is trying to forward the idea that everybody's going to see the stars of the league.
Yes, Mike Trout, you know, people on the East Coast can actually see Mike Trout because they're not sleeping at the time.
And hopefully that spreads the, you know, that kind of draws in the younger demo to see all these players. And you know, the Diamondbacks had not been to Guaranteed Rate since 2014.
I hadn't missed them.
Last night? I hadn't either, but the concept, but that's the way it was happening before. Right. Now they're going to spread it out. It's going to be interesting. By the way, while we're talking about the Cubs, something I meant to bring up with Jesse. Were you okay with them making such a big damn deal about Pujols and Molina at Wrigley Field, saying goodbye to them? You know, a couple of guys that have beaten on the Cubs for a good long time.
My old producer, God bless him, I mean, he's still at it. And, I mean, he'd rather someone stick a pencil in his eye than have anyone salute and celebrate your rival team.
Right.
I mean, that's how old school Dustin Rhodes is. He's just like,
so how about you? Where do you weigh in?
I've gone soft, but I'm certainly, I used to be that guy. I used to be Dustin, you know, how dare you? If I saw people walking around Cardinals gear, I'd probably say something to them up around Wrigley. But I've mellowed, and I mean, you can appreciate.
I get the spirit of it, but it's just still weird.
Yeah. I mean, you know, are you going to celebrate Aaron Rodgers down in Arlington Heights when he's hanging it up if he's still
playing?
There's
no way I want to see that.
See, that's what I'm saying. I mean, those are rival teams who've, by the way, have kept you down more often than not, right? It's only a rivalry if you're the Bears when you're actually relevant, and they haven't been relevant nearly damn enough to, you know, it's a rivalry in talk only, right? I think the Vikings and Packers are more of a rivalry, and not that the Vikings are even close to being the Packers, but the Bears have been so awful for so long and underachieved for so long, and the record has been so lopsided against the Packers. Every time, you know, all the, you know, here comes black and white highlights of George Halas and Vince Lombardi, right? That's what they celebrate when the Bears and Packers play on national TV.
I know. Yeah, you know what? And you brought up Aaron Rodgers, and that is a perfect comparison. But I was going to jump to 90s hockey when I had season tickets. It would be like celebrating Sergei Fedorov.
Ooh.
Oh, what's the guy that just killed us from Detroit? That's the Tampa Bay GM, or he was. Oh, why am I blanking out? Probably the Detroit player with Fedorov, that era.
Oh, and he's not the GM currently in Tampa.
No. I'm totally blanking out. I can't believe I'm blanking out.
I mean, name any of those guys.
Yeah, that's my point.
Dominic Hasek used to be the Blackhawks goalie. I mean,
remember.
Eiserman?
What?
Steve Eiserman?
Eiserman. Yeah, jeez, yeah. I couldn't get to that name. Yeah, Stevie Eiserman. Any of those guys celebrate, you know, they come to, they come to the stadium, or it would have been United Center by then. They retire, and we're sending them off with a celebration.
Here's your
video.
There
is no way.
Yeah, right.
There is no way.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't. I saw that. And again, you know, I'm not a Cubs fan first. So I saw that and I thought, you know what? I get the spirit of it, but it's just weird. This is happening in Wrigley Field.
Who within the division? Is there anyone like that? I mean, there's no one in the division that comes to mind who's been around that long tormenting the White Sox, right?
No. As a White Sox fan, a fan base generally does not like Minnesota. Right. We don't like Kansas City because they suck, but they still give us some kind of fits.
Right, there's not a
comparison.
There's no Hall of Fame guy who's been tormenting you for two decades.
No. There's not an individual, no. No.
Right. Uh-uh. So, I mean, it's tough to say what they would do. I mean, I think as a fan base, the Sox fans would not be standing and celebrating and, you know, lauding AL version.
Now, Torrey Hunter wasn't a big star, but because he slighted us, we hated him. And that would be like if he were a big star and we celebrated him.
That would be no good. I mean, how did they send?
Yeah, but Kirby was a Chicago guy.
Right.
But, we never hated him.
Okay.
We never hated him.
I don't remember. They didn't have any kind of ceremony for him when he was hanging it up, right?
No. Mm-mm. And there's a guy that I wish would have played on the south side. All right, we're up against
Brady. Probably wanted an opt-out or $100 million.
Yeah, and he would have deserved it.
Well, not with the White Sox.
No.
We don't do that. Things the White Sox won't do. No $100 million contracts, no opt-outs. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, you know what? You really shed some light on the structure of the organization and the idea that nobody's really an active shareholder and everybody's just like, Jerry, you do your thing. We believe in Jerry. All hail Jerry.
We see the returns and wait till we get that.
Just can't
check.
Wait to sell. Just can't wait to sell. Don't worry. Yeah, we'll tell the fans we're about winning, but you know we're about making money first, and this is the best way to make money.
And you get better seats too, right? As an owner,
yeah, you're not fighting for seats.
Hey, when I had the one share of the Cubs stock back in the day, in the late '70s, I wrote to Frank. I think Frank Maloney was the ticket guy, longtime ticket director at the Wrigley Field. And I wrote and I said, I'm a shareholder. You know, could you upgrade my seats? I got fifth row behind the Cubs batting circle.
Look at you. One share.
It was a partial season ticket plan my brothers and I had. I mean, it was like 25 games or whatever. No one wanted the tickets at the time.
And that is why you got that.
Yeah. Sweet. You know what those tickets would be worth today? Man, oh, man.
We've got a couple of calls to get to before we get out of here. 312-332-3776. A couple of Twitter polls at ESPN 1000 to wrap. We'll do all of that when we come back. Peggy and Dion are coming up at 11 here on ESPN 1000. All right, we're just about to wrap things up here. Following us, Peggy and Dion, brought to you by Sinus and Snoring MD and Philco Windows, Sidings, and Doors. All right, so we've had some action on the Twitter feed today. BMG Train 77, Brian said, how about Joe Mauer for a comparison in the White Sox division to Yachty or Pujols for the Cubs? Yeah, maybe. Certainly I wouldn't see them throwing a party for Mauer. Did we not have Mauer at the end of his career, or was it Justin Morneau? I have to look that up.
We had
one of them. Those were the two guys. Yeah. And one of them, I think it was Morneau, we had for like a cup of coffee. You know how the White Sox would invite the people, and they're, as their way out to the retirement parking lot, they say, hey, how about 5 more minutes with us?
Oh, that was the Blackhawks, right?
Well, Blackhawks were famous for that, too. Yes.
Doug
Gilmore. But the White Sox, think about it. Ken Griffey Jr., Paul which was Coffey. Great to see him in that uniform. But also, John Kruk.
Yeah,
I mean there were a lot of them, but I think more it was Morneau.
It was Morneau.
Yeah, not Mauer. I wish it was. Mauer.
I think Mauer was a twin for life. That was
the thing. But I don't think that's about as close a comparison on the south side you can get. But definitely would not be throwing a party for him. All right, we've got Joe and Tinley wants to jump on, taking it back to Bears talk as the Bears take on the Browns tonight, preseason game number 3. Hey, Joe, you're on with Xander and Hanley.
Hey guys, how are you doing? Hope you're having a good day. I want to talk about Mike Martz's comments.
Yep.
And, like, I take it with a grain of salt when you give up Greg Olsen for Manianumu, whatever the tight end's name he wanted as a blocking tight end.
I used to call him Manianumu useless. Yeah. yeah, he was.
I know it's not the greatest show on turf, but we have at least Fields with promising. He had Orlowski and Culpepper. It was Calvin Johnson's first year. 1 year under, as year after his rookie year. I don't know any of their offensive linemen. Their running back was Kevin Smith. I think we have better running back. I think our secondary is going to be pretty good if they stay healthy. And, like, the whole Greg Olsen thing, you couldn't use him in your offense to make it better.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
No. I don't disagree. Thanks, Joe, for the call. I forgot about the Olsen thing. Yeah, right. Clearly a situation like I felt we had with Nagy, where it was like Nagy was immovable. Like, you've got to fit into what I'm doing, which I kind of get. But when you have a player that can really benefit from a different approach? You know, where do you meet in the middle?
Yeah, I mean, you tailor, you can have a structure and a belief in a certain system, but the really good coaches find a way to, you know, work around the talent they have. And if that guy's a real talent, you figure out a way to maximize his opportunity and possibilities.
Right? Bring out the best in every player, no matter what sport it is. If you're a coach, that's why coaches matter. Now, Mike Martz, Beer Fan Bob, brought up the point that Martz was probably trying to make a name for himself, get himself back into the news cycle, the hot take, whatever. It was just like, you know what, look, I don't think it's going to be somewhere in the middle. Eddie Jackson say, we're going to surprise a lot of people. Are you? Hopefully.
Sounds good.
Or is it going to be like Detroit Lions bad? Nah, come on.
Somewhere in that vast middle.
Yeah, it's a vast middle. And as long as we see Justin Fields make improvements, and again, you know what, may the force be with you, Justin, if you can get around all these challenges and get the and show us your best, and it's better than we thought that we had.
Here's what I want to see tonight. I want to see an opening possession touchdown drive for your Chicago Bears against a not very good Cleveland team.
You mean right off the bat? Let's just get there.
They haven't had one in a preseason game on the opening possession since 2000, and the data before 2000, according to Brad Biggs, is not available.
Wait, not 2000 something, just 2000.
2000.
Okay.
It's been 22 years. Mm-hmm. So all those preseason games times 22, what, 3 times 22 or 4, whatever it was back back in the day, no touchdown drives.
And it's way too many.
They settled for a field goal last time, right, against Seattle. Mm-hmm. So, and by the way, speaking of Cleveland, you see Deshaun Watson, what's going on? The executive for the NFL in charge of discipline and all this stuff, a woman came out and said that he's basically part of the suspension and all that. You had to go through a treatment program, right, mm-hmm. and adhere to it being analyzed and evaluated and then work at being a better person. And she's already saying that he's basically a con man and he's not, you don't believe he did anything wrong. So how's he really going to get better?
She's not wrong. If he's denying and he's going to go to a program, it's just going to be a waste of everybody's time.
But they have to sign off on it for that thing to be only 11 games. So if he isn't actively changing and doesn't want to change and doesn't believe there's anything
to change, I'm just glad that he's not our problem.
Absolutely. Hey, and today's college football opening, right?
Yes, it is.
Watching, when you listen to Peggy and Dion, we'll be monitoring Austin Peay in Western Kentucky.
Not me.
Okay.
Now, let's hit those Twitter polls. We've got a little bit of time. Charlie, what does the Twitter poll look like as far as Shohei Ohtani going to the north side or the south side if they were to trade him?
The Cubs are at 75% and the White Sox are at 24.6%. So, looking more likely for the Cubs. At least that's what the fans seem to think.
Okay. And the other Twitter poll, the White Sox are 63-63. They will finish this season above 500, below 500, at 500, and fourth choice, who cares?
Who cares? 42.1%.
See, I knew it.
See, they don't let you down, do they?
No, they don't. Yeah, look, you got to show it. If you ain't going to show it, we don't care. Yeah,
the next highest is below 500 at 21.7%. So. Okay.
And that's the actual the expected record given run differential. They're 9 games under right now. If you follow that, so.
All right, tonight we're busy. We've got baseball games. First pitch at 6:10 for both the Cubs and Sox, and then the Bears are playing at 6. So we're going to be using our remote pretty heavily tonight. Brian, always a pleasure. We'll see you again tomorrow here on ESPN 1000. We'll be here at 10 a.m. And Charlie, thank you for running the show. We've got Peggy and Dion next. Sox pregame with Tyler Aki at 5:30. Connor and DJ on the call. First pitch at 6:10 here on ESPN 1000. Chicago, have a great day.